We'll move to the next case of the morning. Cosby versus Ziegler. Ready, Mr. Titolo?
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
May it please the court. I am Matthew Titolo with Mayor Brown Rowan Ma for defendant petitioner Monica Cosby. This case, in this case, the district court decided that petitioner's right to counsel claim was procedurally defaulted under Illinois law, that the right to silence claim was without merit, and that the ineffective assistance of counsel claim failed, was reasonable not to raise the motion, and it's not ineffective assistance of counsel to raise what the district court called a losing argument. We ask the court to reverse and to remand for an evidentiary hearing or to the district court or to the state court for a new trial. As a threshold matter, we have to address the waiver issue, especially the waiver issue of the right to counsel claim. The legal standard, there are two issues here. One is the legal standard under Illinois law under its Post-Conviction Act, and the standard for fair presentation under federal law. In this circuit, under Ellsworth, for example, this circuit requires that the petitioner frame a claim so as to bring to mind a specific constitutional right and to allege facts that are well within the mainstream of constitutional litigation. The petitioner did both of those things in this case. The right to an attorney, we concede right up front that the right to the Fifth Amendment right to counsel claim could have been much more clearly articulated in the original post-conviction petition. First of all, under Illinois law, post-conviction petitions must be construed liberally. Under Seventh Circuit law, the substance of a claim must be fairly presented. Both of these standards were met. The post-conviction petition alleged that, for example, that the police initiated questioning of Monica, that is Monica Cosby, the petitioner, after she had exercised her Fifth Amendment right to counsel, Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, and after they knew she was represented by counsel. The initial petition was supported by affidavits from the lawyer with whom she met at the station, and that affidavit alleged that the lawyer called the police station, said that the petitioner was not to speak to the police without the lawyer present, that the lawyer went to the station, conferred with the petitioner, and spoke for her to the police.
Your time is so limited here that I want to ask you to focus on at least what I think is a pretty important issue in this case, the claim that this was a strategic choice by the lawyer to let this 9 o'clock in the morning statement be heard because it set out, in essence, her defense that the victim was already dead and she couldn't be complicit in the murder. Now, admittedly, that would hurt her on the concealment of the body charge, but on the more serious charge, that did offer a potential defense to her.
Well, that's not entirely clear. The ineffective assistance of counsel claim the problem is that the failure to investigate that report led to an erroneous belief that essentially amounted to a slow guilty plea at trial. The fact that he didn't, that is that petitioner's trial attorney did not call the pathologist to find out what strangulation meant, that is that the counsel simply assumed strangulation meant strangulation with a cord, that it did not mean asphyxiation, which is exactly what the pathologist testified to at trial, admitting her statement that she placed a plastic bag over the victim's head amounted to saying that she participated in the murder, because the plastic bag could cause asphyxiation. And the pathologist testified at trial to something that could have been revealed to...
Well, in her statement that she wants suppressed, she said she thought the lady was dead.
She did say that. That's correct.
That is at least bolstering his position that she did not know she was participating in a murder, which is considerably different than concealing the death or burying a body that... inappropriately.
That's correct. But the lawyer has a higher duty, though, than what... In other words, the lawyer should not take the statement at face value. He should have investigated and found out that under Illinois law, this would not have flown. It would not have been a viable defense to say that the...
If you really, honestly, sincerely believe that what you're doing is moving a dead body, whatever the law says, how about a nice jury appeal?
I didn't know
I was killing anybody.
Yeah. First of all, there wasn't a jury in this case. But
well, even if any trier of fact, don't you think that has an effect on him?
Well, Strickland says that the question is whether it was reasonably competent representation. Well, reasonably competent representation requires
she doesn't have a hell of a lot of wiggle room in this one.
Well, Your Honor, we disagree. The fact is that under Strickland... And under ABA standards, the lawyer is required to find out what the state's evidence is, not just...
Her boyfriend knocks off his own mother to help her out.
I'm sorry?
Her boyfriend knocks out her own mother to knock her out, and they lug the body out. What kind of wiggle room do you think she's got?
Well, this was a case of first-degree murder. The question is not whether she concealed the body,
yeah,
right? The question was whether she strangled the victim. And essentially, the lawyer said, yes, she strangled the victim.
But if she... wants to claim, which seems to be a pretty interesting claim here, that it was a mistake of fact. She thought the mother was dead already. She gets that in without having to take the witness. I know she took the witness stand here and testified for a very, very long time. But she had the option of not having to testify and get that in front of the jury if the lawyer did not seek to suppress it. And was not successfully suppressed.
Right, but wasn't a reasonable choice, though, because
every lawyer would agree that that was not a reasonable choice? I would think some lawyers would agree that sounds pretty good to me.
Well, the standard is not whether every lawyer, you know, that we don't need to have 100% agreement. That is the standard under Strickland is not whether 100% of lawyers would say, yes, that was strategic. Clearly, Mr. Murphy thought that was a strategic choice. He did think that was. We're not saying there was bad faith. We're saying that under Strickland, there's a higher duty required. He needed to call the pathologist.
Was her story at trial different from her story that she told in response to this statement?
Well, the story... she tried to explain the statement at trial. There were a couple of problems there. First is that Judge Lampkin said that one of the reasons she found the defendant guilty was because of her credibility determination. She didn't believe the story. She wouldn't have had to tell that story had the lawyer done his homework. This is the problem. So if we keep going back to this question of what...
Well, I don't follow that.
Well, the lawyer...
She had an option of not testifying. If she wanted to persist with this claim that I thought this woman was already dead when I helped my boyfriend. She gets that in without having to take the witness stand.
Right, but the lawyer should have known better. That should never have come in. It's not a viable claim. The plastic bag, a pathologist testified at trial that the victim was alive when the bag was placed over her head. That cannot be a mistake of fact.
But the important thing is what she thought. If she thought, she says her boyfriend came in and said, I just killed the old lady or something. I just killed the mother. And I believe that. And I went out and I helped him. That's a defense mistake if somebody's going to believe it.
Well, sure. You can raise all kinds of defenses. There's no question about that. And if the facts had been different, then that would have been viable. But the pathologist really ruled out that as a viable claim. She could not have reasonably believed the woman was dead when, first of all, the pathologist says the woman is alive. when the plastic bag's placed over her head, and the judge finds that the police photographs...
But the pathologist wasn't
that's
there.
That's an after-the-fact
No, I understand that. But the plastic bag was molded to the woman's face. There's no reasonable there's no reasonable room there for a mistake of fact defense.
Well, that's an interesting attitude. You better save your 1 minute left for whatever...
All right.
For a long bat.
Okay. I will then save for time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Silverman?
May it please the Court, I am Jonathan Silberman with the Illinois Attorney General's Office, and I represent the respondent in this appeal. With respect to procedural default, I just want to point out what's not at issue. What's not at issue is an ineffective assistance claim that was raised fairly in the state courts. The difference between our positions is the underlying substantive claims were not raised, and for that, I say Lewis v. Stearns. We can look at the at the PLA, Lewis v. Stearns, which holds that the saying that a lawyer's failure to raise a constitutional claim is different than the and separate from the underlying constitutional claim. We can look at the petition for leave to appeal as the clearest example of the failure to raise anything other than the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, and indeed the petition itself only raises an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Unless there are questions about that, I will rely on my brief on that that point. I think it's clear. I think the petitioner claims that there was something in the record that she was not to speak without her lawyer present. There's nothing like that in the record. What happened was this lawyer was called by the mother, went down to the precinct and spoke to the petitioner and said she's going to rely on her right to silence. So there was nothing,
Isn't that pretty much the same thing?
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Why not?
The procedural consequences are quite different, and the underlying theory about it.
He said what?
She's relying on her right to silence.
And that you don't think is the idea that she ought to shut up?
It is that she ought to shut up.
Yeah.
But the question with respect to a lawyer, well, if your question is that the same thing as saying, I want a lawyer to interpose,
right.
That's different.
Yeah.
The right to silence means precisely that.
Mm.
And it's not an unambiguous request for a lawyer. The procedural consequences are quite different. The procedural consequences are as follows. With respect to a lawyer, if someone says, I want a lawyer to deal with custodial interrogation, the underlying reason for that assertion, that means that there can't be any questioning until a lawyer is present for that interrogation. When there's
exercising her right to be silent, stated by a lawyer who represents her, doesn't mean that he wants her to shut up and not be subject to questioning.
Your Honor,
you'd better rely better on the fact that he used a trial device to
yes, Your Honor.
Cut it out.
I will say, though, that there was never an assertion that he did represent her. They spoke, and I will now move on to the strategy question. This was a very reasonable strategic choice. Under Illinois law, and it's cited in our brief, People v. Kane, and there's if someone believes that they perform acts after a person is killed, that is not first-degree murder. It doesn't have to do with whether the person is dead or not, and I want to make that quite clear. It has to do with whether the person believed that. And there was abundant evidence, or there was evidence, in the statement itself to support that theory. The petitioner, and also testified at trial, the petitioner said that her co-defendant came into her and said, I've killed my mother, I did it for you. And that was not only supportive of the person was dead, but also supportive of this mistake of fact defense. That was a reasonable defense to pursue, and important to do so. And the utility of it was it didn't matter what the ME said. Now, let me go to the ME. Let's say the criticism is that the lawyer should have interviewed the ME. It turns out the ME says,
Is the ME a medical examiner?
I'm sorry?
What's
the
ME?
I'm sorry. Medical examiner. I apologize, Your Honor.
He's still stuck with the state where everybody is a coroner. Everybody except Cook County, everybody in Illinois is a coroner, too.
I like ME. Me.
Huh? No. I'll stick with the medical examiner, and I'll say it. But if the medical examiner had said that the plastic bag had been was put on when he was still alive, the lawyer should have heard that, and then said, "I'm going to cross examine that because that's not what the autopsy report said. The autopsy report said that the victim died from blunt head trauma and strangulation, and I'm going to try to." Attack the medical examiner's credibility. Now, but even if I don't, my defense is still viable because my defense is that the petitioner believed that the person was dead. Now,
she testified that he put the bag over the head, right?
She testified, yes, Your Honor.
So there's some contradiction. I guess the logic of putting the bag over the head was it was all bloody and making a mess, and that was going to.
Yes, Your Honor, under her defense.
You have to have a criminal mind to think of something like that, my man.
Well, they were indicted and convicted, Your Honor.
I understand. I'm talking about why they put the bag over the head.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was not all that she did.
Criminal mind.
Now, I just want to talk about the strategy. Let's look at it at the time when the lawyer was formulating it. The petitioner had been indicted for what? Had been indicted with the co-defendant for strangling and beating the victim. The autopsy report was similar. It was quite reasonable to think and to have to meet that claim head on. As well as I say, this mistake of fact defense, which did not hinge on whether the person was dead or not when the plastic bag was put over her head. So it was quite a reasonable strategy. Her story at trial was the same, and that is another reason why this claim need not even be reached. Her testimony made the statement harmless. Now, with respect to what the trial court did, and it's in the record in terms of the findings of fact, the trial court rejected the petitioner's credibility based primarily on the physical evidence, but not the medical examiner's report or the medical examiner's statement. The trial court looked at the heard the petitioner and looked at the photographs, and the photographs demonstrated that the plastic bag was molded to the victim's face. The petitioner had to see that she was breathing, that the petitioner was bound such and tightly, again pointing to the photographs, such that it was a fair inference that she was alive at the time. So it was the physical evidence, along with her demeanor and presentation of her testimony, which caused the trial court to reject her claim. A petitioner also calls for an evidentiary hearing. I'm not sure what that would be. The affidavits are in the record. It is what it is. Unless there are questions, I will rely on my brief.
Thank you. Mr. Totolo.
Thank you. First, just to correct the confusion about what was in the record, about what the lawyer said to the police. The lawyer says, this is on in our separate appendix, SA 70, I advised the desk officer that I was on my way to the station to tell Monica that I was on my way and to ask the officers to stop all questioning of Monica until I arrived. So just to clarify that, he actually did.
And then what happened after he arrived?
Oh, after he arrived, he spoke with her for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Police came in, and the lawyer and the defendant booted them out and said, "We're still talking." They came back in, and then the lawyer said, "Monica, standing on her Fifth Amendment right to remain silent."
Okay.
They photocopied his card, said "Attorney at Law," and then she said, "I want to stand on my right to remain silent." And then he left. They reinitiated questioning later.
Okay.
But I'd like to get to the ineffective assistance question again, to return to that. There are a number of problems with the state's argument here. One of them is that, first of all, even after the medical examiner, M.E., spoke at trial and testified, cross-examination would not have cured it. The lawyer should have moved to suppress that statement after the medical examiner spoke, and after the lawyer knew, he should have adjusted his strategy. After he knew that the ME was going to say that she was alive, he should have known at that point that the mistake of fact defense was not viable, and he should have moved to suppress and changed his strategy. He didn't do that. That's a problem for the state. The other issue is whether she had to testify at trial. Under Harrison, she did. She was impelled to take the stand under Harrison to rebut or to explain the statement that she gave at the station. So all of this goes back to the fruit of this poisonous tree, that the statement should have been suppressed. She should never have had to have testified, and she should have and the lawyer should have simply allowed the state to prove its case with what little direct evidence it had. You have to remember that the plastic bag over the plastic bag over the head was the only sorry, Your Honor, may I finish the sentence?
You did.
It's a long sentence.
Okay, may I just... The plastic bag over the head was the only piece of direct evidence.
You heard it.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you also were court appointed, is that correct?
Yes.
We appreciate your good work on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Court, for a special granting the motion for him to argue as a law student.
Good job. This case will be taken under advisement.